supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I'm Dan Gottlieb. Thanks for listening to Voices in the Family. Baby boomers, hey, we wrote the song Forever Young. Our generation was instrumental in the civil rights movement, in the women's rights movement. Our generation helped end the war in Vietnam. Our generation, my generation, just cannot get old. It's just ridiculous. But I can. I can get old. I've been old for 35 years. That's when I became a quadriplegic. I know the pain of letting go, or more accurately, of having my youth and my vitality pulled from my grasp. I know the grief, and I know the relief. I know how good it was, and finally, I know how good it is. So a couple of weeks ago, when I read an article in the New York Times by Michelle Willens, who's one of my guests on today's show, in it she talked about many of our generation's unique struggles. We still have our parents and our children. We have encore careers, and many are being forced out of work. Meanwhile, we're living longer, which is always more expensive. So we thought we'd open up this conversation on today's show. As I mentioned, we've got journalist and playwright Michelle Willens. Michelle, thank you for joining us in today's show.
Oh, thank you for having me.
And thanks for the work you're doing, by the way. We're especially pleased to have psychiatrist Roger Gould joining us. He's the author of the influential book, Transformations. Roger, great to talk to you.
Good. Nice to talk to you. Nice to be here, Dan.
And with me here in the studio is an old friend, Rabbi Dale Friedman. She's a leader of local wisdom circles and author of the forthcoming book, Jewish Wisdom for Growing Older, Finding Your Grit and Grace Beyond Midlife. Dale, great to see you again, be with you.
A pleasure.
Our number is 888-477-9499. It's 888-477-9499. Well, are you struggling with any of these issues or the hundreds of other issues that affect and will affect our generation? Give us a call, 888-477-9499. I've got to, Michelle, I want to start with you. Your article, I mentioned, I really resonated with it for many, many reasons. What kind of feedback have you gotten?
Oh, my God. I said to the editor a couple of days after the piece ran, I said, well, there are 77 million baby boomers, and now I officially think I've heard from every one of them. So it was kind of endless. I mean, I thought the piece would resonate, but to be honest, I really didn't know how it would be perceived. You know, I thought some people might think, oh, here they go again, the baby boomers whining, you know, about something. And I was trying to make the case that we're having, this is more of a psychological issue almost than, you know, financial or physical, that it's like you were saying, you know, it's really just coming to terms with the fact that we can't use our youth anymore. I mean, we were really the generation that, you know, that was our identity, that we were the youth that was making a difference, that was creating the best music, that was ending the war, that was, you know, starting all these movements. So we really relied on that as part of our identity.
We've come a long way from, you know, the tie-dye T-shirts and ponytails, bell-bottom jeans, and looking around for a roach clip while listening to Jimi Hendrix.
Well, that's right. I mean, some of us are still listening to Jimi Hendrix.
Was that too much self-disclosure just now? What is our struggle about here, Roger?
What is the struggle?
Yeah, I mean, is it about simply the boomers' collective narcissism here?
No, this is the universal struggle of marching through the life cycle. This is the whole issue of. I think Michelle said something very interesting about we depended on our youth. Everybody from childhood on has a future space in their head. It's usually about 10 to 20 years. And in 10 to 20 years, I'm going to be here and everything is going to be fine. Then you get to be a certain age and you look down the road 10 to 20 years and everything is not going to be fine. So that's the inflection point that we're talking about, and that's universal.
Dan Gilbert, who Harvard cognitive psychologist, who wrote Stumbling on Happiness, one of the things he said in that book that I thought was so fascinating, he said, all of our decisions are about making our future selves happy. So I thought that was interesting. When I thought about it, it's really true. I mean, who we marry, you know, and why we marry and every decision we make, right down to restaurants we're going to go to and what we're going to order. But he said the research shows we have no idea what's going to make our future selves happy because we make our decisions based on our past selves. And that's never the case.
Right, and a whole series of fantasy constructions about what the future is and what happiness is. It's all in your head at that point in time, because the difference between what you imagine life to be and what life is quite significant.
I want to turn to you, Dale. Is this what you're finding with the women you're speaking with?
Women and men, absolutely.
And men.
We are on this precipice, those of us who are boomers and a little bit older, of having to face an unknown. And it's an unprecedented unknown, because this is not your grandfather's aging.
Yeah, but my image of my grandparents' generation is two old guys sitting on the bench, you know, feeding the pigeons, complaining about being constipated.
Yeah. And A, that's not the most appealing thing in the world, but B, you know, you might be able to do that for 10 years or 5 years after you retired at 65 and you reach your lifespan. But if we're going to live till 90 or 95 or even 100, many of us, that means that if we are lucky enough to retire at anything like 65 or 70, we've got a whole other chunk of our lives, and we better not imagine that we can spend it simply playing or recreating. That's just not going to be enough to hold us in this life.
The question is, how do we do this? Michelle, you pointed out a couple of different scenarios for boomers, how one group moves to college towns and surrounds themselves with younger people. This is apropos of being all of a sudden finding ourselves the oldest man or woman in a meeting. So what you've done, young lady, is you go to the 92nd Street Y in Manhattan, where you are the youngest kid on the block there.
Yeah, right. I sort of said that people tend to, how we deal with this depends on a lot of things, you know. How we deal with it may depend on how we were treated when we were younger. You know, were we the youngest sibling? Were we the, you know, the prodigy? Were we? So that's one issue. Now that we're here and we're in this situation, how are we going to live with it? And there are people who just want to be surrounded by younger people for a lot of reasons. It makes them feel young. Yes, they may be the oldest person, but they feel hipper, you know, and more vital just being around younger people. And maybe, frankly, they feel their those if they become friends, they'll live longer. You know, they won't be going to as many funerals as the rest of us are. Others tend to go to places where they're still the youngest. Now, you know, those places are dwindling, you know, unless you're going to go sit on the Supreme Court. But there aren't that many places anymore. know, where people are older than us. So there are different ways of dealing with it. As I said in the article, I've actually gone back to college. Now, that's not so bad. And that really does have to do with my age, I don't think. It has to do with the fact that I never got my degree. But I have to say, I kind of like being around all these younger people. You know, it's a real challenge, but it's fun.
I just want to give out the numbers again, because we're starting to get callers, and I want to make sure everybody who wants to join the conversation does. We're talking about the boomer generation and what's going on with us. How many of us are not aging happily? We're not skipping down this transformation from middle age to Social Security to Medicare. Many of us are struggling for lots and lots of reasons. Our number is 888-477-9499. Again, that's 888-477-9499. Roger, you describe a pull towards safety and security, and at the same time, a push towards growth and adaption. Do they have to be different?
No. It's the mixture. But every time you adapt in a way in which you try out new behavior, you are challenging an old sense of safety. And your new behavior has to be something that is refreshing and is exciting. And at the same time, you establish a new pattern which makes you feel relatively safe again. The whole issue about this period of life, of course, is that the illusion of absolute safety that you can have for a great part of the life cycle, you just can't have that anymore. And the transformation or the change or the challenge is to become wise. I was struck by the title in Dale's book. Eric Erickson talked about the last phase of life being the challenge of becoming a wise person. And a wise person is where you start, or where you to make the decisions that's going to make this part of your life work as good as it can. So the wisdom is the issue, and it means accepting your life where the props in life are not important, but your own wisdom and your own integrity is important.
Give us an example of that. What does that look like?
Well,
I mean, you're doing clinical work, yes?
I'm doing clinical work, okay. But wisdom. What happens naturally is that all the things that you thought life was supposed to be when you get to be 65, 70 years old, you find out it isn't. You may have achieved all of your goals and been very excited about that at one point in your life, but having achieved all those goals, they no longer are important. If you haven't achieved all those goals and you're still measuring yourself by some arbitrary set of standards about how rich you're supposed to be, or how powerful you're supposed to be, or how many friends you're supposed to have. Those are all the external props that sort of get you through life. But at this point in life, it's more of a singularity, accepting that you are, and you can't be measured by some other kind of standard, and that's where you start to figure out what is wise for you, what you've learned about life and what it means, and that's where you begin to make a whole nother nexus for making decisions.
Well, part of the potential for this process, and Dale, I want to toss this to you, is that we have the ability to step back and take a look at our lives, life, what it means to have a life, from a wider lens that we really can't do, even anatomically when we're younger, because we're busy doing and achieving, accomplishing, moving mountains. And now we have the ability to sit back and admire the mountains.
Yeah, I think that we don't want to draw too harsh a distinction about, you know, this time of life is only for reflecting and the other part of life is only for doing. But it's certainly true that primarily when we're in what Dr. Bill Thomas calls our adulthood, we're very busy. We're busy, 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 and yeah. we're doing, doing, doing. And when we get to this third chapter of our lives or second adulthood or whatever we want to call it, we have the opportunity to dip into being in a different way. And that means looking hard. Self-reflection is essential, I think, to not going into despair.
Would you agree with that, Roger?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, I was going to ask Dale, what is some of the Jewish wisdom for this part of the life cycle?
Well, one of the teachings that I particularly cherish is a teaching from a man named Rabbi Isaac Abravanel, who was a medieval sage. And he said, when you get to the last seventh of your life, you've done your work, you've had your childhood, this time of life is sabbatical time. It's not about producing. It's about attending to your soul and preparing provisions for the journey. What is it that's going to sustain me on the road ahead? What can I lay in terms of provisions, whether that's relationships or soul work or connections or practices that may sustain me even when I'm all by myself and terrified? That's the work, I think, of this part of life.
You know, I interviewed years ago a physician who just threw out a line that said medicine, in his opinion, was the most spiritually malnourished profession in the world. And that phrase, spiritually malnourished, has stayed with me ever since on a deeply personal level and as a clinician with the people I work with and the people I love. I mean, spiritually malnourished. It's quite moving. Let's see if we can squeeze a call in before we have to take our break. We've got Beatrice on the line from Cherry Hill.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, this is Beatrice. Thank you for taking my call. I had a comment, and the comment was, as I am older, I realize that I should be more productive and find each day and get up each day with a purpose for that day for myself. And I am cheerful. I have physical problems, but I deal with it and move on. And I am happier for it. And I think the main two letters of the alphabet should be P, for productivity and purpose. And thank you for taking my call.
Wait, Beatrice, can we hold on to you for just one second here?
Surely, surely.
Have you always had that kind of attitude, or has that come to you?
Actually not. It is only in my retirement age that I've become more aware of things like this. Earlier, it was the working and the raising the family and so on. It's only after into this new phase that I'm able to think clearly and enjoy by accepting the talents that so I think I have in, let's say, providing instruction for persons who want to learn English. And I have a great time. And when they thank me for helping them, I do it voluntarily.
Yeah.
I thank them for making my day productive and giving me reason to be with them.
Yeah.
So
well,
I think that's the key, really.
Beatrice,
purpose and productivity.
If I had known about you last week, I would have gotten rid of all these other people I've got on my show,
my
and you would have been
thank
my
you
expert.
Kindly. Thank you so much.
No, the sequel.
Thank you for listening.
The sequel. Beatrice, thanks so much for your call.
Not at all.
Call.
Thank you. Thank
you. She brings up so many important issues, you know, about the shift, what we were just talking about the shift that can happen when we stop running around, and we begin to reflect. But she also talked about finding meaning in life, and I want to talk about that after our break. That's very critical, and I wonder if that changes over the life cycle. Well, like I said, we've got to take a short break. Michelle, I know we have to say goodbye to you, and I want to thank you so much for your insight and your delightful and important writing.
Thanks so much for joining us.
When we come back, we'll still be speaking with Roger Gould, who's a psychiatrist and author of the books Transformations and Shrink Yourself. Rabbi Dale Friedman is going to stick with us. She's the author of the forthcoming book, Jewish Wisdom for Growing Older, Finding Your Grit and Grace Beyond Midlife. Our number is 888-477-9499. We're talking about the boomer generations, the many issues that come up for us. Again, 888-477-9499. We still have one or two lines open, and we would love to hear from you. Well, I'm Dan Gottlieb. You're listening to Voices in the Family. That's right here on WHYY-FM.
The Solana Doylestown and Atria Senior Living Residence proudly supports WHYY. Opening this fall, the Solana Doylestown will offer independent living, supportive living, and memory care options for older adults. Details at solanadoylestown.com.
I'm Dr. Russell Kaufman, president of the Wistar Institute. Wistar proudly supports WHYY and announces the opening of its new seven-story Robert and Penny Fox Tower, designed to accelerate scientific discoveries. Here, Wistar scientists are working together on a new flu vaccine designed to eliminate the need for an annual flu shot and save thousands of lives in the process. Learn more about this and other advances at Wistar.org. The Wistar Institute, today's discoveries, tomorrow's cures.
Supporting WHYY, the Pennsylvania Farmers Union. Family farmers working together to ensure the survival of a diversified food system by serving as a vital voice for family-scale agriculture. More information at pafarmersunion.org.
People try to put us to down. Talking about my generation. Just because we get around.
And that's what we're talking about on today's show. My generation, our generation, those who were born between 1946 and I think it's 1964. So it's a large generation. And we're joined here in the studio by Rabbi Dale Friedman and Dr. Roger Gould. Roger, there's something you said before we get to the stuff about meaning in life. Something you said that really bothered me. You said that what we're dealing with is what every generation deals with. You're telling us we're not special in this generation?
No, you're not special at all. You might be different, but you're not special. There's no exclusion from the life cycle.
You might be different, but you're not special. Spoken like a politically savvy parent.
Right. I like your caller, Beatrice. She really nailed it. You're right. You should have got rid of the rest of us and just had her on.
Really?
She said it much more briefly. She said she made the transition from her busy life to this part of her life by finding her purpose. And her purpose is that's her interiority, that's her singularity, that's her wisdom. And basically, that's the story.
I'm going to ask both of you. I'll start with you, Dale. Finding purpose, is it more critical this generation, this time of life, than any other?
Well, I think because of what we talked about before, about how extended these chapters of our lives can be, we really can't afford to simply sit back. you know, even though the commercials would like to tell us that we should just put on our Nikes and just do it, you know, we need to have a purpose and we need to have connection to something of significance. And if we have that, we'll be much more able to cope with the hard parts, the scary parts.
Roger, you used the phrase interiority. I wanted to make sure that was clear with a T and not an F. But yeah. What? How do you define that? How do we understand interiority?
I think you understand it best by comparison to its opposite. If you spend most of your life facing outwardly to the world, to people, to the challenges, to the work that you are doing, to other people's adulation in order to build your own self-regard, if those are the things that keep you feeling good about yourself and keep on moving, that's too much of a dependence and too much of a focus on things outside of yourself. If you have your own ability to reflect, to be quiet, to think about things, to differ than other people, to decide how you want to spend your time, not always in response to external demands. If you make room for yourself and your feelings, if you acknowledge your differences, if you let go of some of the false criteria, all those processes are interior processes, and they all require a certain amount of reflection, a certain amount of ability to be quiet within, and that's where you build gradually your wisdom about yourself and about life.
It's almost like a dear friend of mine who's 92 years old said to me, "You know, Danny, who would have thought that at this stage of my life I'd finally be comfortable inside my own skin?"
Right.
So, you know, she sits in her apartment, she might read or watch TV, and, you know, somebody that comes and a neighbor who helps her with her groceries once or twice a week. But she said, "I'm comfortable inside my own skin. The stuff just doesn't matter anymore."
I think that the stuff doesn't matter anymore. What is that stuff?
Yeah.
Well, one of the things that I've written about and I like to talk about and I talk with patients about is that the weak spot of every human being is their self-doubts, is their own perfectionism, their own critical voice of themselves. And most people spend a great deal of their life trying to run away from that critical voice rather than trying to understand it. When you run away from it, it stays there. It lingers. When you get, as your friend said, to this part of her life, she had to do work so that, in fact, that critical voice was not the commanding presence in her life.
Well, I have to tell you, one of the gifts of quadriplegia and one of the gifts of aging, I discovered when I became a quadriplegia, I can't run from my demons. I have no choice but to sit with them. And, man, that was an excruciating gift, you know, because you sit with them, you're no longer afraid of them, Dale.
Yeah, I just wanted to kind of balance this idea of going inside and becoming comfortable with ourselves, which is essential. But one of the ways that I'm finding that we can do that is by finding the people with whom we can tell the truth about our experience.
Yeah.
And one of the beautiful things I'm finding as I teach groups of older women, and they get to just talk about what it's like to be at this stage of life and what's scary and what's exciting and what's juicy and what's painful, is that it's comforting and it's clarifying just to be able to hold it together.
On the other hand, we hear so many people who, as they age, are more alone, they're more lonely, they're more isolated. And I would imagine that's everybody's fear. But Roger, that gets back to your issue of, you know, finding security and safety versus growth. I mean, there's really nothing safer than living inside your own cocoon by yourself.
Yes, but I don't want, I think Dale brought up a point. I don't want to, when I say interiority, that doesn't mean isolation.
Right.
You know, the way you become and have more interiority is basically, it's by some self-reflection, but that doesn't mean you sit all day long by yourself and just think about things in a monastic kind of a way. I think being out with people, talking to people about it, is all part of the process and the processing of what's important and what's not important. And that leads to this whole sense of engagement and purpose and connection. I think that the worst thing a person can do is to be in a into a forced isolation or a self-imposed isolation that's not natural to them.
Hmm. Let's. We've got a lot of people who want to join the conversation. Let's go right to Ted from Riverton. Hi, Ted.
Hello. Thank you. Thanks to you, Dr. Dan, for your great courage and your wonderful program always.
Thank you.
I'm approaching 70, and as a young person, tested very high in standardized tests and IQ tests. I've had careers in several different areas, sciences, arts, business, and I'm now deeply conscious of a sense that I haven't gained what I could feel to be any wisdom along the way. Where you could say to a younger person, well, this is how it is, kid. An understanding of how other people think and feel. And that's interesting.
I'm troubled by what you said, Ted, that you haven't acquired any wisdom. First of all, anybody who says to anybody else, this is the way it is, ain't wise. that's somebody with a big mouth who doesn't really. Well, anyway, I don't want to go on because I'm not supposed to be judgmental, but you know, you get it. And
yes.
I would also think, and I want to turn this over to Roger and to Dale, but I would think just that statement of yours really opens the door to self-reflection. That's a definition of self-reflection. Even whether your assessment is right or wrong, the door is open here. Dale?
Yeah, as you were talking, Ted, I was thinking about the verse in Proverbs that says, the beginning of wisdom is fear of God. So if we were going to translate fear of God in our world, I think fear of God would be, I don't know. It's not all about me.
Right.
So I heard in your saying, look, I've got a lot of knowledge and probably a lot of skill, but I'm not sure I really know or understand the most profound things, just to share that vulnerability with that younger person that you're imagining talking to. You know, and let's walk together and let's ask questions together. That's wisdom. That really is the capacity to be able to say, I don't know, and it's not all about me.
10 years ago, I treated a brilliant scientist. He won all sorts of awards down at NIH. Really was at the top of his game. And, you know, he was struggling with social issues, not unusual. And I said to him, you know, drop the degrees after your name. And for now on, remember DKS. And he said, what's that mean? And I said, don't know, you know. And
yes.
I mean, that changed the course of his life. Like, he got permission not to know anything, you know? And that's the beginning. Just like Dale said, maybe more eloquently than I did. But
thank you.
That's it.
Thank you. I'm trying to learn that the facts and the things that one might know in that sense aren't the important thing, but trying to relate to other people and understand other people.
Let me give you one guess about this wisdom business. It's already in there. It's already in there.
Thanks.
Take care.
Thank you.
Roger, we kind of cut you off from that. Did you have any thoughts?
No. I agree with what everything's been said. I think that it's demonstrated what I was talking about abstractly, which is that the measures before are important, but they're not as important. He's already achieved all of the things along the measures of being smart, competent, and accomplished. And the wisdom is there because he's now starting to say, well, you know, there's more to life. And now he is reaching inside and saying, the things I don't understand about other people that I now find interesting and curious. His meaning is already, his new meaning structure has already begun to develop.
This, as they say, this is going to be interesting now for him. Dale?
Yeah, I just wanted to add that I think that two qualities that can be really helpful to those of us who are growing older are curiosity and experimentation. If we can just be curious about, who might I be without this particular role, or maybe without this particular structure that has held me before, and what might it be like to try something new? And for experimentation, it's clear that there is an aspect of this post-midlife life that is like adolescence, and that we don't really know what we want. And it's really okay to try things on.
Now it's exciting. Now it's exciting not to know what we want. Before it was scary, but this can be exciting. Well, we've got to take a short break. We've got lots of other callers. And Roger, I know we have to say goodbye to you at 12:45.
Right. So I would just add, if I could, to Dale's statement, add risk. Risk of the experimentation is implied, but experimentation in which you really take a risk, because that's where the new vitality begins to occur.
Ah, that's great. That's terrific. Roger, I want to thank you so much for joining us and taking some time out of your crazy busy schedule.
Thank you very much. I enjoyed being here.
Good. Thank you.
Goodbye.
Roger Gould is a psychiatrist and author of the books Transformations and Shrink Yourself. Well, we'll be coming back after a short break. Rabbi Dale Friedman is going to stick with us. She's the author of Jewish Wisdom for Growing Older, Finding Your Grit and Grace Beyond Midlife. When's that coming out, Dale?
Spring 2015.
Give us a call. Our number is 888-477-9499. Again, that's 888-477-9499. Are you a baby boomer? What's this process like for you? Give us a call. Love to hear from you. Well, I'm Dan Gottlieb. You're listening to Voices in the Family right here on WHYY-FM.
This year, more than 750,000 Americans will suffer a stroke and need advanced medical care. You may learn about the signs of stroke by visiting christianacare.org/aboutstroke. Christiana Hospital has earned comprehensive stroke center certification from the Joint Commission and the American Heart Association and American Stroke Association by their commitment of meeting high standards for treating the most serious stroke cases. Christiana Care proudly supports WHYY.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. Security cameras captured the carnage as terrorists killed more than 60 people in a Kenyan mall last year. In a new film, we see the video and hear from survivors who escaped.
I was looking at his face. He was young. And he looked at me and he fired.
That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
We are back on Voices in the Family. I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host. We are talking about, will you still love me when I'm 64? My guest is Rabbi Dale Friedman. She's been with us since the top of the hour. Earlier on, we heard from Michelle Wheelans, who wrote a wonderful article about this in the New York Times, and Dr. Roger Gould, who's really on the forefront of this issue since the early 70s. Dale, let's go right to the phone. We've got so many people who want to join the conversation. Let's start with Arlene from Lansdale. Hi, Arlene.
Hi. Yeah, really good, interesting show. And two words you keep talking about is what concerns me, relationship and connecting. After being a teacher for 30 and a guidance counselor for 35 years, I enter the classroom now, you know, as a substitute teacher, and these students have their iPhones out and their cell phones and their iPads, and they sneaking them in. If you keep on telling them, put them away so you can connect and relate with them. And I'm finding it, this new generation of doing that is very frustrating for me as a baby boomer.
Yeah, Dale, I want to hear your reaction too, but I feel exactly the same way, Arlene, but I never know if it's because I'm using my wisdom, my experience, or it's because I'm just old, looking at the younger kids being frustrated by what they're doing, and I just never know. Dale, help me.
I have teenagers, so whose eyes are seldom averted from a screen. And on one level, it seems so isolated. And on another level, they are connecting all the time to the wider world and to their friends who can be all over the world with an immediacy that we couldn't even imagine when we were young. So I don't think it's one thing or the other. I think it's really both. And I totally understand the frustration, Arlene. And I wonder if there's a way to coax connection in the here and now with those kids whose eyes are on the screen with a lot of compassion and a lot of understanding that what they're doing is really important to them.
Yeah, knowing that the genie's not going to get back in the bottle, you know, I find the beauty of ignorance is I have no idea what these kids are doing, what it's like for them, what it means to them. So I love being clueless. So I ask questions. You know, I mean, I'm a shrink. We really don't know anything. We just know how to ask questions. So I love asking questions. Like, what is that? And how does it work? And who are you talking to? And when I talk to somebody face-to-face, I feel this way, and when I'm on the phone, I feel that way. What's it like for you? And, you know, I might be more frustrated and I might be less frustrated, but in that moment, I'm going to feel connected to that young person. So,
and they love to be instructors of the benighted older people who don't know as much as they do about this stuff.
Yeah, I mean,
well, you're talking about individually, but I have to address a classroom of 30 students as a group.
I still think it can be done. I addressed a group. I was teaching meditation years ago to a large group of teenagers and their parents. And the parents took to it like, you know, fish to water. And the kids took to it like fish to climbing trees. And you know, I asked the kids at the end. They said it was boring for them. And all of a sudden, I got really curious. Now, there's a group of 15 kids, and I said, what is boredom? I never knew what that is. What is it? And we explored it further and further. We talked for 45 minutes about the felt sense of boredom, the emotions of boredom, of wanting to be someone else, somewhere else. That was the most fascinating discussion of boredom that I could have ever imagined. So it can be done with a large group. But, you know, just be annoyingly curious.
Thank you.
It's worth a try. Arlene, take care. Let's stick with the phone calls for now, Dale. We've got Morad on the line from Princeton. Hello? Hello?
Hello?
Yes. Did I pronounce your name anywhere near accurately?
Yes, quite accurate, actually. Morad is my first name.
Thank you.
The reason for my call, I just joined the conversation about maybe 10, 15 minutes ago. And I am 77 years old, and I have had many activities. I'm an emeritus professor. I've done some work in business. I was a president of a university overseas and all of that. And all of those quote-unquote accomplishments, I consider them as incomplete accomplishments because they were not completed to fruition. And I keep looking at, you know, what I have done in the past and try to sort of explain it without being able to really move forward. And I, you know, it like all of these things are haunting me.
Can I ask you a question, Morad?
Yes.
You're telling me about what you did, what you accomplished, what you didn't do. Who are you now?
Well, good question. I'm an adjunct professor at the university. Who am I in terms of what?
Your humanity right now. Who are you? What's it like to be you, to live inside your skin, to see the world from your eyes, to listen through your ears? What's it like?
Well, I guess I don't know who am I now. I can only describe myself as I'm a person that is looking for his legacy, if you will, and can't identify one. And that bothers me. And in essence, that's really why I look at everything that I've done and don't feel that it has accomplished anything. Other people tell me, you know, you should really look back at what you've done, and that's more than enough.
You know what?
Yes.
I think, in my humble opinion,
yes,
when you can look in the mirror and look at that person looking across at you,
yes,
and feel some kindness and compassion for that person, feel some gratitude for that person being with you your whole life, then the door will open, and then you will find your legacy. What I want for you, just one human to another, what I want for you is peace. And then everything changes. Look at that man in the mirror, please.
Well, thank you very much, Dad. I hope I can do that.
I hope so, too. Dale, you had a reaction.
I think that Morad is experiencing really the human condition, which is none of us completes what we set out to do in this life. The biblical story of Moses standing, viewing the promised land that he worked so hard to reach and being told, you're not going, buddy, because none of us ever gets to fully fulfill the external things. What we can hope to do is to become whole and complete in ourselves.
Find compassion for ourselves.
And I love how you put that. Absolutely.
Be comfortable inside our own skin. Dale, before we have to end the show, I want to ask you about this despair, fear, about what are we really afraid of. I know as we age, death can be a bit of a problem here.
Death can be a bit of a problem, and it's pretty much inevitable for everybody that I've ever known.
Yeah.
So that's looming. And there's something about whatever is that first sign that shows me I'm growing older. I'm not the youngest person in the room, as it was said in Michelle's article, or I've got those gray hairs, or I can't do XYZ thing that I used to be able to do. This is going to end, and it's going to end with finality. So that's really scary. And I think there are a lot of other things that are scary and that are part of our internalized ageism. Like, I won't be as worthwhile if I'm not doing, as Murad was talking about.
Right.
Or people won't like me if I'm not completely well and independent. Or somehow I will not be whole if I am also in some way limited, broken, fragile.
I often quote, I think it was Sartre, who said, we must live with death on our shoulder. And when we do that, we wind up living with life on the other shoulder. And it's right there where we are the most vital and the most alive. Don't race from or away from death. Just allow it to be present along with this vitality called life. I want to thank you so much, Dale, for joining us.
It's what been a delight.
Delightful spending this hour with you. Earlier on, we heard from Michelle Willens and Dr. Roger Gould. Well, I want to, apropos of this boomer thing and aging, I'm going to be giving a talk at Widener University. It's for the International Conference on Sexuality and Aging. So please look it up on my webpage. And the title of my talk is I'm Too Sexy for My Catheter. Apropos of this, sex is different now, and it's great. Everybody's shaking their head at me from the engineer's booth. Next week on Voices in the Family, that's a tough segue from that one. Next week on Voices in the Family, we're going to be talking about the disconnect between mental and physical health in our modern approach to wellness. Well, to download our podcast, go to whyy.org/voices. We're at Twitter at Voices in the Fam. And you can reach me at drdangottlieb.com. You can find out about this lecture, and I've got several others coming up in these next couple of months. Well, the engineer for today's show has been Al Banks. Elizabeth Perez-Luna is our executive producer of audio content. Lindsay Carfagno is our intern. Emily Haas is our production assistant. Mike and Scott is our executive producer. Gita Simons is our producer. Me, I'm Dan Gottlieb. Enjoy your week, my friend.